High school hijinks, all this back and forth, the ringing and slamming down on the phone, Bobby Trivette's souped-up charger laying rubber in the drive, and then the boy disappearing angry, taking part of the lawn out with his tires when Drew Ann wouldn't skip to his yell of, "Drew Ann, come out here, you know I need you!" And when she didn't appear, his bellow drubbed down to decent conversation level. "I need you just a minute." He sounded a little pathetic. Reese watched from the floor above, with the gauzy drape on his and Bev's front bedroom window held loosely between his fingers so as not to crimp it with sweat. "What is it?" Bev whispered, probably still half-dreaming. "The kids are fighting." "Well, your spying won't change that." Bev rolled over, opposite to the window, away from him. Nothing new there. Reese was no voyeur, lurking and getting kicks from his daughter's rotten luck. He just couldn't sleep. And interested in seeing how the scene he peeked at played out. Might as well watch. He wouldn't be heavy-lidded any time soon. Bobby Trivette's antics made the calm invitation to sleep now near impossible. Reese saw moonlight on the car's front grille show off its crazy metal gleam as the boy backed out, sped down the street, ignored the stop sign, gave it gas, geared up, left Drew Ann after she'd run inside, after he'd pummeled the door and she refused to answer. He recognized Bobby's charger as both classic and familiar. Even if Drew Ann gave Bobby Trivette the minute he begged for, a minute would never be enough. Trying to bully her, he was, and Reese knew his daughter would not bend like a flower to Bobby's son. The girl had her mother's stubborn streak. This, Reese confirmed to himself over his mud-black Folgers in the morning paper. He preferred his coffee strong anyway, but especially so following the 2 a.m. drama played out in the driveway, and then the hour or so after of Drew Ann's whimpering to herself and sniffing in the room next door, during which no Finch slept. That's the opening to At Bobby Trivette's Grave by Donna DiVitucci. It's a story of teenage love, teenage angst, and yes, a bit of teenage redemption. Written years after the events remembered on the pages, our story unfolds from the perspective of a grown woman who's returned to the family home of her not-so-dissolute as real-sounding years of her youth. The lead characters, we've met most of them. Drew Ann, her passionate and sometimes reckless boyfriend Bobby Trivette. Her mom, her dad, ring true for their time and for the hijinks they get into. Who is this Bobby Trivette and why is he so central to our story? Well, Bobby's the small town's bad boy of his generation. But Vitucci paints him as a high schooler with not so much a good heart as with a devil-may-care view of life. Drew Ann's father, Reese, gives us as good a description of Bobby as anyone when he tells us, "Reese had few friends, and he was suspicious of new introductions through work or even at Drew Ann's elementary school, but he did like Bobby Trivette. That boy had a way about him. Reese said Bobby made him think of his own youth, the naive and goofy sense of entitlement, the view that every fruit's ripe for the picking, so go on and taste all you can. Time's already running short. It could also lead you to prison or the grave. But Bobby was too dumb to wreak the kind of havoc that changed lives for the worse." The family characters and the situations they find themselves in ring true here. The devil-may-care Bobby head over heels in love for Drew Ann. Their parents, the townspeople with whom they live, are all tied to their small-town central Kentucky life. Drew Ann's mom made the sweeping effort to leave town as she was on the cusp of graduating high school, traveling by bus all the way from central Kentucky to the Windy City to tour DePaul's Chicago campus. But a bad experience on the way to the big city. And let me tell you, the bus drive through Indiana doesn't put our state in the best light in this part of the story. Sends Drew Ann's mom scuttling back to the security of the small town she knows so well, and that knows her so well, too. It's Paris, Kentucky. Yes, a real central Kentucky town. And Paris may be insular and not a font of big ideas, but it is the warm bosom of life Drouin's mom knows. And her mom now frets that her daughter, Drouin, will fall into the same acceptance of life as it is and not as it could be, as she did those many years ago on her breakout to Chicago. The death of Bobby Trivette, and yes, giving us the title at Bobby Trivette's grave, does occur early in our story. But the repercussions of that death on Drouin, on her family, on his family, travel with us in ways unexpected and expected through the rest of this well-written story. So though our story may be set in the rolling bluegrass hills of central Kentucky, in the small town of Paris, outside of Lexington, hey, Indiana is not the only state with highfalutin town names. It is a story that could be set as well in any small town in America. And let me note as well that Donna Tucci paints this landscape and these people very well. Indeed, let's note that Vitucci conveys that sense of place so well, be that the lazy hopefulness of summer nights, the heightened sense of place on a crowded interstate bus ride, or in a ride through the hills of central Kentucky in a pickup carrying contraband and loudly squawking caged roosters. She nails the mood and the sense of place. We read novels for the characters as much as for the storylines, perhaps sometimes even more. And Vitucci's characters make this first novel stand out from others, for they are more than just a teenaged boy and teenaged girl with parents who worry and fret and wonder about them. As their novel progresses, they become much more fully developed characters with secrets and hopes and dreams, fears and questions that resonate with the reader from page to page, chapter to chapter. As another reviewer has written, quote, Vitucci conveys a passionate and poignant story with a clear eye. It's heartbreaking without being mawkish or sentimental. This is high-quality fiction, but I hope it also finds a market with young adults. Her teenage characters, their love and their loss, are treated with respect and the compassion that they deserve. Newly forming authors, we're often told, are encouraged to write about what you know. Write from your own experiences and find success. And while the girl I grew up with knowing as Donna is presenting life here in central Kentucky, what happens in these pages certainly does have plenty of Midwestern drama and sense of place from the recent past to show how well this advice to write what you know can indeed work. As I mentioned, Donna is a girl that I knew growing up. She was a good friend of my sister's back in the old days in Cincinnati, and she nails so many of these characters, so many of these people that we would have known growing up, setting it in central Kentucky as she does. It's not that far, as I said, from the Midwest ethos that so many of us know and grew up in. Let's finish by reading from the final chapter, where Drouin is a little bit older, has been through so many more adventures than when we first meet her on those opening pages, and she's reflecting on what life might just hold in her future. We learn it was a day after school, like any other in early December, when her father worked at the office, her mother in the barn, weaving twigs, as Drouin teased. Though honestly, her mother's wreaths turned out so beautifully unique, Drouin understood why people paid the money they did to hang them in their homes, on their doors, against gravestones. Her mother's hobby was something precious that rescued her. Even Drouin could see that, felt it, though she couldn't imagine what her mother needed saving from. Drouin considered she could maybe get herself a hobby to fill the limitless time, make it real to her, and make it pass. Such a beautiful day, the sneak of warmth inside winter. The kind of day to rip through running, to let the wind cut your lungs and let your eyes tear up at all the invisible stuff in the wind. Cross-country season had ended. But Drouin could prepare now to take up running track in the spring. Her last big high school hurrah. She'd begin today. The quarter after four sun sat in the sky in a dangerous position. Round bottom road wound level around its share of twists and blind curves, but Drouin chose to run there anyway, a challenge. She looked straight ahead into nothing but blinding light. Cars drove out of that whiteness toward her. She could hear them. Those with their headlights on were two bright eyes emerging from another bigger brightness. Lazier drivers drove more ghostly machines. Maybe only the hood of an SUV or the top of a van fuzzily defined before it practically stomped her. She used the road's white edge line as a guide for her feet. That's mostly where she kept her eyes on the crumbling edge. When she tried raising her head, it felt as though she was running into heaven. No telling left from right, front from back, if the gully or the ridge was where her feet headed. So easy, then, to lean too far into the whoosh of motors. She could do it with the right mix of sound, light, and dizziness. She kept running through her crying, pushed her cuffs to her eyes, and let the spiral-filled darkness relieve her from the gold afternoon. When Duran opened them again, the light made her squint, and tears that remained in her eyelashes spangled everything she looked at. Still a pretty place to live, she decided. She ran with purpose, and more safely from then on. Over Christmas vacation, Duran checked the University of Kentucky website and set out filling in the online application. It would make her parents happy. It might even make her happy, if she let it. Her crooning for him inside her head never stopped. Her mom promised the pain would ease, but Duran bet she'd be crying over Bobby forever. Winter made it seem so, anyway. To Cane Ridge, not to Cane Ridge. The Corolla, with its extensive repairs, would not turn in there. It resisted. Maybe needs power steering fluid, she could almost hear Bobby say. He knew everything about cars. He knew everything about everything. He knew her best. Why visit the shrine at Cane Ridge? Plenty of dead elsewhere. Wardell Trivet didn't need or even want her pilgrimage. Old bastard made her and Bobby believe maybe the world held something good for them, something precious. His was just a voice from the past with no concern for them. His selfish words still plowed the Cane Ridge air 200 years after, urging on dreams only to dash them, trying to stir up belief in things unbelievable. Bobby didn't belong in the ground in the first place. His body was radioactive, full of heat and light and sizzling energy. He always had to be tapping his toe or his fingertips. He would bust that grave wide open. It'd be like Dawn of the Dead and Star of the Flick. He'd come for her. Stupid thought, she knew, and so anti-church when she should be praying for Bobby's eternal rest. All winter, she'd never brought flowers, but she carved in the dirt with his knife she'd stolen on his grave. Their initials stayed atop Bobby until rain made them illegible, or until snow obscured them. Duran loves Bobby, and all the ways she could think to carve it was wiped out by winter. Duran herself was winterfied by these visits. When the ugly weather let up, she'd begin tracing all over again, trying to make be what had been. During study hall, she logged onto a computer in the school library and jumped from page to page, reading about UK, and tried imagining herself walking across a campus strewn with leaves, or sitting in a classroom several stories up from the ground, or any place Bobby hadn't haunted. It's a beautiful, it's also a sad story, but it's a story of young love and of adults who are living through that love as well. At Bobby Trivet's Grave by Donna Vitucci. It's a great read, and it's available at the West Lafayette Public Library.